ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kinda heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Special counsel Robert Hur takes a beating from the left and right on Capitol Hill concerning his report on why he did not bring charges against President Biden for mishandling classified documents. What's the political fallout of this decision and the hearing for the presidential campaign? Plus, Joe Biden says he frowns on the proposed purchase of U.S. steel by Nippon Steel of Japan, a rare intervention that could be a slap to an ally if the deal is in fact blocked. What are the merits of the steel deal? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal Opinion Pages here on our daily podcast, Potomac Watch, and I'm here with Bill McGurn and Alicia Finley, two of my colleagues. Let's start with the Hur hearing, Bill. You listened to it and have written about it. The Democrats, of course, hit him for commenting in his report on President Biden's faulty memory, and the Republicans hit him for not indicting Joe Biden. Here's how the special counsel, who was appointed, remember, by Merrick Garland specifically to investigate Joe Biden, defended himself on Capitol Hill.
My assessment in the report about the relevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate and fair. Most importantly, what I wrote is what I believe the evidence shows and what I expect jurors would perceive and believe. I did not sanitize my explanation, nor did I disparage the president unfairly. I explained to the attorney general my decision and the reasons for it. That's what I was required to do.
He's right. He was required to write a report. That's what the Justice Department special counsel regulations call for. Write it to the attorney general. Then the attorney general can make a decision about whether to release it. Merrick Garland decided to release it. In my view, a smart decision, since it undoubtedly would have leaked and he would have been accused of somehow covering something up. But what's your judgment about how Robert Hur handled himself?
I think he handled himself very well. Remember about a month ago when the report was released, made public, the Democrats really went after him, accusing him of being a political hack, a tool of MAGA, and so forth. They were mad because he pointed to Joe Biden's big weakness going into the 24 campaign, which is his mind, his mental acuity. And they all attacked him for that, rather than focusing on what should have been for them, the substantive good. He's not bringing criminal charges, and he made some distinctions between Joe Biden's case and Donald Trump's, and they really blasted him for that. I think yesterday, though they still attacked him for that, they'll never forgive him for bringing up Joe Biden's memory. Though they attacked him for that, they tried to make it into a trial, Donald Trump. I think they recognized the whole thing had backfired them. Remember, Joe Biden called an impromptu press conference that night to prove that he's all mentally there. And then he made more lapses and came across as really cranky and angry and lost. So I think they kind of learned the lesson from the last time.
Well, they may have learned the lesson. That doesn't mean they weren't willing to bash her around. But one of the things, I think, a point that's important to make, and this is really just a factual observation, which is that once a prosecutor in Hur's position makes a decision to prosecute or not, that is, he's a special counsel, he's obliged to explain that decision to the attorney general. And once he decided, as he did, based on the evidence, he said he did, his report did, that the president had willfully retained documents, and willfully retaining means in violation of federal law that says you can't do that with classified information. He had to say, okay, well, I say willfully retained, so why didn't I prosecute? And that's when he got into the explanation, Alicia, that it was a matter of he didn't think a jury would convict because he thought they would conclude that the president's memory was faulty enough that he couldn't, at some basic sense, be held responsible for that. Now, there was also the matter that he wasn't going to indict a sitting president anyway, which would have contravened Justice Department rules. But he said, even if that weren't the case, I would not have brought the charges for the reasons of memory and ability to get a conviction before a jury.
Right. So prosecutors have a lot of discretion in which cases and charges they bring. And this is in part a matter of prudence. In order to actually get a jury conviction in criminal charges, you need to prove a scienter or mens rea that somebody actually acted with intent. He believed, based on the transcript and the evidence, that President Biden willingly retained the documents. And there was a recording of Biden with his ghostwriter mentioning that he knew that these were classified documents.
I just found the classified documents.
Exactly.
As he said.
But the issue is if he would presumably be asked to testify in a trial, and given the, his faulty memory, which was eminently observable during the interview, and again in the press conference a little later, that maybe they wouldn't actually find him all that credible. And, you know, the defense might actually argue that, well, you know, Biden, he's a little old, he might not have remembered, and this would have made it less likely that a jury would convict.
And a prosecutor has to keep that in mind. I mean, you don't just prosecute somebody to punish them. You prosecute them because you think you will actually get a conviction. And that's one thing you have to consider. Bill, another element of this, though, from the Democratic side, was they tried to tarnish Robert Hur as a partisan. Let's listen to Congressman Hank Johnson of Georgia.
You are a Republican, though, aren't you?
I am a registered Republican.
Yes, sir. And you're doing everything you can do to get President Trump reelected so that you can get appointed as a federal judge or perhaps to another position in the Department of Justice. Isn't that correct?
Congressman, I have no such aspirations, I can assure you, and I can tell you that partisan politics had no place whatsoever in my work. It had no place in the investigative steps that I took. It had no place in the decision that I made, and it had no place in a single word of my report.
Bill, Hank Johnson demonstrating again that he is such a class act as a member of Congress. Just sheer hackery, impugning Hur's motives, when in fact there's no evidence to impugn his motives, other than the fact that he is a registered Republican, which I guess is, in Johnson's eyes, an offense. The thing that puzzles me here is why Democrats didn't cheer more and say, hey, look, he wasn't indicted. Trump is, and focus on that point.
Well, they did a little. I mean, half the time they spent trying to make the hearing a trial about what Donald Trump did. I think that what you played, that was the cheapest shot of the day, but there are plenty of others. Jamie Raskin is saying we're inviting fascism in. Someone asked him, accused him, as though it was a crime, of being a member of the Federalist Society, which he said he was not.
The Federalist Society, the group of originalist conservative lawyers.
I think it just shows the weakness of the case. One of the things Hur made clear is that Joe Biden has almost half a century record of taking documents that he shouldn't have classified and keeping them at home in different locations, you know, six locations. So it didn't go well for them. So I think they tried to just smear the messenger for that. Hank Johnson was undoubtedly the cheapest. That was the slimiest moment of the hearings.
So another point that Hur made in his report was the contrast with his decision on Joe Biden versus the indictment that has been made by the other special counsel, Jack Smith, against Donald Trump for his mishandling of classified documents. And that case is ongoing. It hasn't gone to trial. We don't even know when that trial will be, if there will be one. Trump is going to be in court for a hearing in his case, pleading two grounds, Presidential Records Act. He says he has the right to retain those documents, and then an abuse of the Espionage Act with which he has been charged, trying to get the case dismissed. Alicia, we still don't know how Judge Aileen Cannon is going to rule.
Right. So I think the more serious charge in that case is really the obstruction charge, that he basically wasn't really the crime, it was the cover-up. And we don't really know how the judge is going to rule, and the Trump has tried to dismiss it under the argument that, I find it a somewhat compelling argument, that the special counsel wasn't constitutionally appointed. He's a private citizen. He did not go through Senate confirmation and the advice and consent, but it would be under the Constitution, an officer of the United States.
That he must be.
Must be, right.
That means Senate confirmed.
Exactly.
That's a controversial argument.
It is. And I think they're going to make it. And if they don't get a ruling down at the district court level, I think they will actually try to appeal it all the way to the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court may end up hearing this case too.
And if that's the case, probably push that past the election. Bill, but the issue of a double standard between the way Trump has been indicted for his handling of documents, Biden was not indicted, did come to the fore in the Robert Hur hearing, particularly from the Republicans, who basically accused her of carrying water. Some of them did for Biden in this instance. And I guess Hur fell back at his answer and said, look, the difference is the obstruction charge, as Alicia pointed out. It was that Trump didn't cooperate and withheld documents even after he was asked by a subpoena.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Although I think the critics have a good point. That's true. And Trump should be charged with obstruction. But for the underlying crime of retaining classified documents, so forth, it doesn't quite explain why you wouldn't charge Biden with that, because they established a clear record. And of course, he said the only reason he's not bringing charges is that he probably couldn't persuade a jury. So I think there's somewhat a case, but politically, I think all these distinctions are going to get blurred. I think to a lot of Trump supporters, they're going to see Joe Biden not charged, Donald Trump charged. They're going to watch the behavior of the Democrats at the hearing. I think it may help Donald Trump. It may help him more that Joe Biden isn't being charged than if he were.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have more on the political impact of the prosecution cases or not. And Joe Biden comes out worried about the Nippon Steel purchase of U.S. Steel when we come back.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot here on Potomac Watch with Alicia Finley and Bill McGurnan. Alicia, you heard Bill suggest that at least insofar as the presidential campaign is concerned, leave apart the courtroom implications, but as far as the presidential campaign, the documents cases are going to blur in the public mind and are probably not going to be all that important. What do you think?
I happen to agree with him. And I think there are a lot of other, in terms of the Trump cases, there are three or other cases. And I think these are all starting to blur in the public mind and they're starting to discredit them entirely. And I think that's one problem for Joe Biden and Democrats, because I think the public hasn't really been paying close attention to these. They've seen Trump has been indicted again. And maybe there was a little bit of more resonance when the transcript came out, and I think the Republicans' charges that there may be a double standard. Whether or not that's true, I think that it's become more of a salient political point. And then they'll hark back to Hillary Clinton and her server and all that. And I think that Trump is essentially being treated unfairly, and that this is essentially a political vendetta against him. I think that that's really energizing the Republican voters. And I think that's why Trump, to be honest, won the Republican primary.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind. The evidence is clear from the polling movements that the various statements against Trump helped him get the nomination. On the other hand, the question is, well, now that it's a general campaign, if there were some kind of conviction, would one or another conviction hurt him? The documents case, because of its complications, looks like it's going to be kicked past the election. That's probably the likeliest outcome. Judge Cannon could, of course, call a trial before then. We'll have to see. But if there's no trial until after, then this case, too, will not really have much of an impact. All right, let's turn to the second subject of the day, and that is this odd intervention by President Biden expressing publicly his concerns for the Nippon Steel proposal to buy U.S. Steel. It's a $14 billion proposal. Nippon Steel is a highly efficient and important steel producer buying the venerable U.S. Steel and promising to honor all labor agreements, promising to invest and improve the technology at U.S. Steel plants, which Nippon Steel is just a much better steel producer. So it could really improve the operations of U.S. Steel. And yet President Biden came out and said the following. It is important that we maintain strong American steel companies powered by American steel workers. I told our steel workers, I have your backs, and I meant it. U.S. Steel has been an iconic American steel company for more than a century, and it is vital for it to remain an American steel company that is domestically owned and operated. And quote, Alicia, is it really vital to have an American steel company that operates in the U.S. domestically owned? if it makes steel in the U.S.?
I don't even think it's vital that they make steel in the U.S., but based on Biden and a lot of these industrial policy proponents on the left and right, that is their stated goal, is to increase steel production in the U.S.
Even if you believe that, okay?
Okay.
Even if that's your belief, that you must make steel in the United States, this would help that.
Because they're coming in, they're saying, we're going to do a $1.5 billion capital infusion, which would allow them to upgrade to the various plants to become more efficient. The issue here is that the U.S. steel workers and the Cleveland-Cliffs, which is a major competitor,
corporate competitor,
have opposed the deal. And what's interesting here is one of the deals, there was a bidding war for U.S. steel last summer between Cleveland-Cliffs and Nippon Steel. And Nippon Steel actually outbid them. But U.S. steel also said that they didn't want to go with the Cleveland-Cliffs offer because they were worried about antitrust concerns. And the combination between the two would basically give them 65% to 90% market for the steel that is used in U.S. cars.
Now, this is not the Nippon purchase.
This would be the Cleveland Cliffs purchase of U.S. steel, right.
Cleveland Cliffs being another U.S. company, which is unionized. And there is the key. Hold that thought. We're going to take another break and we'll come back more on the Nippon U.S. steel imbroglio when we come back.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right!
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast. That is, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot here with Bill McGurn and Alicia Finley on Potomac Watch. We're talking about the rhetorical intervention by Joe Biden to attempt to interfere with the Nippon Steel proposal to buy U.S. steel. Alicia, why is the union question important here?
Biden is very close to the union. He views the union support as critical for his reelection. We were talking about Cleveland-Cliffs, and it's based mainly in Ohio, and I don't think Ohio is really a swing state, but he's kind of fashioned this argument that he's very pro-worker, pro-working class, and here Trump has actually come out against the deal.
The Nippon Steel purchase.
Right, and then the two Pennsylvania senators, John Fetterman and Bob Casey, as well as Sherrod Brown, have come out against saying, and Sherrod Brown actually is at risk in this next election.
He's Ohio senator.
Ohio, right.
And he's up for re-election this year. So this is trying to outflank Donald Trump, I guess, on the protectionist front, Bill. But unlike Trump's tariffs, which attempt to block foreign steel, this would attempt, if the purchase were blocking a foreign investment in U.S. steel production. It's very different.
It's insane if you really care about workers. I think U.S. Steel is 27th largest steel producer in the world, and Nippon is fourth. So you have a very healthy company investing in less healthy company. Talk about workers. The studies show that American workers that are employed by foreign-owned companies in the same field generally make about 5% more than workers working for American companies. So this is just scare tactics. They look at it as a hostile act. Japan is a friendly country. We invest all over the place. Japan employs about 950,000 Americans in various industries across the board. It reminds me of, I think it was 89, when Mitsubishi was buying Rockefeller Center. And there was all this hue and outcry. But American companies buy foreign companies overseas all the time. It would seem to me this is good news for U.S. Steel, gives it a lease on life. At one time, they were the largest company in America, but not for a long time. Increasingly, they've been dependent on various prongs of industrial policy, protectionism, buy American, that sort of stuff. And it hasn't helped them. Plus, as Alicia points out, the union. And I think Nippon Steel is a way to making competitive in the 21st century. And it's amazing that both parties seem to be opposed to this.
Not yet. Elements of both parties, but now with, certainly they're leading the presidential candidates, but I guess that defines the party more than any other thing. Alicia, just a couple of points. One, there's some foreign policy implications for this in the sense that Bill says Japan's an ally of the United States, and we want cross-Pacific trade with them. We want cross-Pacific investment with them, heavily invested both ways already. The president recently said he's going to postpone approvals for liquefied natural gas export projects. Well, guess who's a big user of liquefied natural gas? Japan. And we want to attempt to sell more liquefied natural gas to Japan because it needs the energy. The president put that on hold. And those are long-term contracts. When they're cut, that sent a signal to the world that, hey, maybe the U.S. isn't a reliable provider. And now you have, oh, by the way, you also can't invest in American companies and manufacturing. I think the Japanese will react to this very badly. And I think they have some cause to do so. And it will be a very bad message for investors around the world about whether you can still invest in the United States without needless political interference.
I think that's right. Japan is a key ally. And I think this actually really undermines the Biden administration's, efforts to kind of strengthen the alliance to counter China.
Yeah, this was supposed to be the administration that shored up alliances.
Alliances, right. And actually, the other irony here is who really would benefit from this deal going down? And it's actually China, in that the Chinese are the leading producers of steel. And to the extent that this makes U.S. steel more competitive, now I grant that U.S. steel production is somewhat protected by the 25%. And tariffs, but Chinese are still the world's leading steel producers, and this would actually help China and maybe shore up its market share. And going back to the point of Japan, as you point out with the LNG, I had a meeting with the Japanese foreign ministry a year or so ago before it seemed Biden was even contemplating this pause on LNG exports, and they were very worried because they've paused and shut down a lot of their nuclear plants on the expectation that the American LNG will fill the supply gap. And now that a lot of these projects are not on hold, they're like, oh, well, what are we going to do? And it's likely what's going to happen is they're going to turn to coal. I mean, coal from China and coal from Indonesia. And how does that really help the climate?
Or they cut a deal with LNG exports from Qatar or from Australia. So it's a puzzler. The other issue, Bill, is, as you point out, the workers. And my understanding here about Nippon Steel's promises is that they want to cut a deal with the United Steelworkers. They want to honor the current collective bargaining agreement with the U.S. steelworkers, and they'd be happy to cut a new deal. They could get the blessing of United Steelworkers.
Yeah, they want to be in the United States boosting U.S. Steel's production. That's why they're investing in it. And so I think if I were a worker there, I would say this is a good sign. Someone values us enough to invest in our company going forward to the future. So I don't really understand this. I think it's just another example of kind of cheap theatrics about standing up for workers when you're not really helping them. You're doing the opposite.
All right, Bill. Thank you. Thank you, Alicia. We're going to leave it at that for today. We're here on Potomac Watch every day. So please join us tomorrow and in the future. We appreciate your listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.